I initially planned on having a library of past ideas that I can go through in each episode. But actually, I find myself more drawn to exploring new ideas. I was afraid of running out of things to talk about. Instead, I have too many. So for this morning, I'm going to take the old baseball bat and try and smash another myth. I think I'm going to make this a series of myth busting. So far we have, there's no such thing as a painful truth, an ugly truth. Now we're going to tackle something else. I'm going to switch gears again and look at one principle that I think could stand to be improved or replaced rather with something far more useful. And that is, keep your eye on the goal. You ever heard that one? And it's used in personal development, it's used in business, it's used everywhere. Maintain that goal in your sights, and you should strive like hell to reach that goal. Okay, so what the hell is wrong with that? What the hell is wrong with having goals? Nothing. Goals are good. I'm not arguing against goals. I'm arguing against the idea that you should always keep your eye on the goal, on the target, because that's actually what this dictum preaches. The problem with that, it fosters an exoteric approach. And let me first explain what that is, because these are two of my favorite terms recently, autotelic versus exotelic. These are terms created by Mihai Csikszentmihalyi, which is the one who also created the term flow. Autotelic is when the activity is its own reward. You do it because you enjoy it, not because you're trying to get something else out of it. For example, painting because you love creating art, playing basketball because it's fun, reading a book because you find it entertaining or interesting. Whereas with exothelic, you do the activity to achieve something else, like a reward or a goal or result outside of the activity. For example, working to earn money, studying to pass an exam, exercising to lose weight or improve health. So in short, autotelic, doing it for the joy of it; exothelic, doing it for an external reason. And I think the principle of keep your eye on the goal, don't forget the goal, that is such an exothelic thing. And then you might be thinking, well, Ovi is going to advocate for the autotelic approach, doing it for the joy of it. Well, yes and no. I don't think that one is better than the other. Both are needed. I think it's a combination of the two. I'm a big one for balance, you'll notice. And I can argue why a balanced approach between autotelic and exotelic brings the best results. But first, let's just look quickly at how each approach works. So if we look at process-oriented, let's call it, process-oriented focus, where you focus on the inputs, you emphasize executing the right steps, and you just trust the process to lead you to the goal. Like you focus on lifting the weights, and you trust that the muscles will grow. Clearly, you should derive some kind of satisfaction from doing the work itself, the inputs, rather than fixating on the end result. And what that satisfaction might be is another matter. You can get satisfaction from doing something you don't inherently enjoy, just because you enjoy the discipline of doing it. You take pride in the achievement of doing something you're uncomfortable doing. This might be a separate subject, but I'll allow myself this little tangent here. This is a very good hack, as people call it, to get yourself to do unpleasant things. To find the motivation, you need to build yourself an epic story for why it's so cool that you are doing what you're doing. Why it's such a big, epic, cool thing that you're, I don't know, washing the dishes or waking up at 5 a.m. or running around the neighborhood. So if in your mind you can get that feeling of epicness, this is something I am proud of doing just because it's uncomfortable, then you're going to have a big advantage. But I think this is worth exploring in a separate episode. For now, let's just get back to the process-oriented focus, right? So just focusing on the inputs. For example, in business, you might just focus on consistent actions like quality customer service or product improvements, rather than obsessing over the quarterly revenue. In physical training, you enjoy the discipline, as I said, of sticking to your workouts. Even if you don't enjoy the workouts themselves, you enjoy the discipline of sticking to the workouts, not just the number on the scale, or, you know, the amount of weight you can lift or the performance in a race. Okay. Now, for the other approach, the outcome-oriented focus that's built around the outputs, you measure success by whether you achieve a specific goal, specific target, specific result. This one is exothelic, because the motivation for the action, for doing the thing itself, is tied to achieving something external, the goal. An example would be in business, you'd be focused on hitting specific sales targets or revenue or profit margins, or reducing certain negative indicators. In training, you're focused on, let's say, running a marathon in under 3 hours, or lifting 200 pounds, you know, benching 200 pounds or 400. So what I'm proposing here is a third way of doing things. And I'm going to get to that in a second. But first, I want to look at the problems, the disadvantages of each method. For the process-oriented one, you have the risk of losing sight of the bigger picture. Because if you just focus on the inputs, you might not measure properly if you're actually moving in the right direction or not, or if you're moving at all. For example, you might be working hard, but on tasks that don't actually move the needle, or the way you're working and trying to move the needle might not be working, but you don't know because you're not looking at the needle. This can lead to big inefficiencies if the process becomes routine, if you start enjoying it too much. Right, you become too comfortable, because in the beginning, you'll feel very proud of sticking to the difficult routine, right? That's going to be the epic part, but you're going to get used to it. We really are very good at adapting to our environment, and we get used to anything, good or bad, especially the good stuff. The other big disadvantage would be the lack of motivation, the lack of urgency, which can lead to lack of motivation. Like, if the process itself isn't rewarding or engaging, just like, you know, lifting the weights, you don't enjoy lifting the weights, but you enjoy the discipline of lifting the weights, then it can be harder to maintain momentum, especially without measuring your progress. And especially people who are driven by results and they have that kind of personality, they're going to have a problem with this approach. And I know one of my mentors, Alex Formosi, is a big fan of this approach, in the way that if you focus on growth in business, a principle, if it's valid, you can apply it to anything. It's not restricted to a certain field, by the way. But let's just look at the business side. He says growth creates bloat. So having growth as a target actually results in bloat, because you're going to grow too fast, you're going to be too greedy, and you're not going to be prepared to face that growth. You're going to sell too much, you're going to overextend, you're not going to build the right team, you're not going to build the right procedures, you're not going to build the right product, and you're going to oversell and underdeliver. Whereas if you focus on the inputs, that's going to result in growth. So If you focused on having the right inputs, the right team, the right product, the right procedures, the right marketing, the right everything, then the result can only inevitably be growth. And I can see his point, but he's just talking about one side of the equation. He's not advocating closing your eyes to reports, right? He says the biggest role of the finance department is to give you reports. That's how you know if you're moving in the right direction or not. Okay, so he's actually kind of advocating for the same thing as I will if you look at it that way. But he's not saying it clearly. He's not formulated a coherent framework for this as I'm trying to do right now. Okay, so second approach, the outcome-oriented approach, what are its disadvantages? Well, first of all, stress and burnout, because if you over-focus on results, you can create immense pressure on yourself. Because you define success narrowly by achieving specific goals. And if, God forbid, progress is slow or you get any setbacks, this can lead to frustration, it can lead to discouragement, or just giving up, a very, very bad outcome. Another disadvantage of the outcome-oriented approach would be the short-term thinking. You might think that if you're focused on a goal, you are thinking long-term. Not necessarily, because if you're focused on a goal, you define winning each and every day to feel like you've made a win. You either make significant progress towards the goal, noticeable progress to you, or you just achieve the goal. The sooner you achieve the goal, the better you feel. So that's actually getting you to rush things. And it's actually short-term thinking, because the goal, instead of being a long-term objective, it becomes a short-term way of getting your dopamine, which is a very good recipe for disaster, because the temptation to cut corners or sacrifice quality to meet targets is going to be huge. And the last disadvantage for the outcome-oriented approach would be that if there's anything that delays the outcome, it's kind of a corollary of the first two, like external factors, market conditions, luck, I don't know, you sprain something and you're unable to train, someone hits you with the car and you can't train for 2 months. This really impedes progress and reduces the sense of control you have over the journey, because your only sense of control comes from, am I moving towards the target or not? So if I stop, I'm going to feel out of control. I'm going to feel like I'm drifting. So what am I proposing then? I'm proposing a third dimension. I don't know exactly how to call it. I have a couple of names for it. I would call it input-driven, outcome-agnostic. That's one way, but that's really a big mouthful, and I really hate complicated terms. Another name would be process-oriented pragmatism. And this one boils down to focusing on the inputs while understanding that you need to also measure the progress. So you basically take the best of both worlds, get rid of all the negatives. I'm a big fan of doing that. That's basically my entire approach to philosophy is, look at what everyone came up with beforehand, try to see which parts they were right about, which parts they're wrong about, get the right parts, get the right Lego pieces from everybody, throw away the ones that don't work, are trash, or are wrong, or whatever, and then see what you can build by putting together all the right parts from everybody. Like, this is what I'm doing. I'm not pretending I'm having some revelations here. No, I'm just looking at what others did before. I am verifying their work. I am trying to find faults. And when I do, I discard the parts that have faults. And when I find golden nuggets, I collect those pieces and then seeing how it can all fit together, regardless of who it came from. An idea should stand on its own. regardless of the author and the context. Universal principles should be able to stand on their own. But back to the subject. My third approach, the one that I'm advocating for, this one's blending the process-oriented thinking with a pragmatic approach to outcomes. And it has elements of flow, I mentioned it before, a state where you're fully immersed in the activity itself, which is you're doing the thing for itself and trusting that the outputs will eventually align with the inputs, but also delayed gratification. So acknowledging that the external goals exist and you need to periodically measure them, and this is highly exothelic, but choosing to not obsess over them in the short term. This is the key. So it's like, imagine you're captaining a ship and you're sitting at the helm. You're on your own, let's say, little private yacht, right? You're sitting at the helm and you're trying to get somewhere. Okay, so you have a destination in mind. What should you do? Should you just look at the stars or the GPS or whatever to plot the course to see how close are you to the destination, to check that if you're on course or not, if you're drifting? Or should you be worrying about what you're doing with the actual helm in the moment, how you are steering the ship away from the rocks and the shallows and the currents and whatever else is there to navigate? Well, you should do both, obviously. Focusing on one over the other will inevitably lead to disaster. So yes, you are going to keep your eye on the helm, on the moment, but you're also going to periodically go and check if you're following the plotted course to the destination. In essence, you're not keeping your eye on the goal, because if you do, you'll stumble, trip over the smallest obstacle, because your gaze is not in the present. It's not in the next step. It's fixed on the goal. So for this inputs-driven, outcome-agnostic approach, the relative strengths it has in regards to the other two approaches, it focuses on control over the process while maintaining a clear alignment with the outcomes, focusing most of the time on the stuff that you can control, because let's be honest, you have no control over if you reach the goal or not. Like if the storm comes and topples your private yacht, you're not going to be reaching your goal, and you probably might even die trying. You have no control over that. But what you can control is where you steer the helm, what your inputs are. So just focus on that. For most of the time, that's what you should be focusing on. But every now and then, it's a cycle. Cyclically, you should be actually checking your map. You should be checking the course. So this approach balances motivation and sustainability, because if you trust the process, this reduces the stress compared to being fixated on the outcome. But you're still keeping the long-term goals in mind to make sure you're making progress. It also gives you adaptability, which is essential to success. Regularly reassessing this process for effectiveness, like, am I actually getting closer to the goal or not? This makes sure that your actions will remain aligned with changes in environment and circumstances. What you should do is check the map, notice that you're going astray, check your GPS, check your tools, check your navigation, and correct your course. React to that change in the circumstances, that change in the environment. And the third and final gift that this approach gives you is resilience, because by decoupling the satisfaction from the immediate results, it's way easier to handle any setbacks you encounter, because the focus remains on executing the stuff you can control instead of focusing on the things you cannot control. Doing that for too long, I think this is where the myth of the Medusa that would turn heroes to stone with her gaze if they looked her in the eyes. Or was that the basilisk? I think it was both. Basilisk being kind of a dragon, so it's the dragon of chaos. I think that's with first origin. I'm riffing Peterson style right now, but honestly, I think it's valid. If the dragon is a symbol for chaos, like Peterson says, the basilisk is a lizard, is a kind of dragon, and the basilisk would turn you to stone if you looked at it in the eyes. So if you gaze at the stuff you cannot control, i.e. the chaos, the dragon of chaos, for too long, you become petrified because you become unable to act. It overwhelms you. It drains you of vitality, of motivation, of life itself. Because if you focus too much on the stuff you can't control, you become unmotivated to act on the stuff you can control. That's the final part of the resilience this approach gives you. Inputs driven, outcome agnostic, or what did I call it before? Process oriented pragmatism. That's right. I like that name. I think this one might not be the easiest by any means. The purpose is not to find the easiest way, because the easiest way is very rarely the best way or the right way. It does require discipline and confidence to not obsess over results. But guess what? These are traits that you can train and you can build. These are under your control. You can be disciplined. You can become disciplined. You can discipline yourself. You can build confidence. And I don't see these as being drawbacks. They are requirements, but they are requirements anyone can attain. And I'm going to speak on how you get these further, but there's a wealth of information out there. But hey, you came to me, you came to listen to me, so I'm of course going to give you that information over time. I'm not going to make you go Google it. That would be rude. So this approach, I think it really avoids the tunnel vision of being too process-oriented and also the stress of being overly outcome-driven. It's a very dynamic system. It's a cyclical dynamic system, like I said. It fosters improvement. You get better at it the more you do it. So it's a lot more efficient and robust in uncertain or unfriendly environmental conditions, which you should always plan for. Because, hey, you're not going to plan your journey for calm seas, and then if a storm comes, you're done for. All right. I hope this helps. I hope to have you back here listening to my rants. Have a good one. Bye.